Jessica Harris, and this is From Scratch. My guest is Mia Bauer, co-founder of Crumbs Bake Shop, a chain of cupcake shops that she started with her husband Jason in 2003. The first shop was located in New York City on the Upper West Side, and the company has grown to roughly 30 stores. Welcome, Mia.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in New Jersey.
And you also spent a large part of your life in Israel.
Yeah, before, in my formative years, up until seven, I was in Israel on a kibbutz, or really a moshav, but similar.
What is a kibbutz, for those who don't know?
It's kind of like a commune is the best way I like to describe it. I mean, there's a whole socialist undertone to it, but it's shared living, shared expenses. No one really owns anything. Your property doesn't belong to you. It belongs to the organization, and everybody earns their way by contributing to whatever is needed on the kibbutz. If it's farming, if it's working with the animals, if it's working in the store. So everybody chips in whatever way that is best for them.
What do you remember about your early life, and what influences are there that might have impacted, what you're doing today?
I think it's pretty much informed most of my decisions, and absolutely, as strange as it sounds, my business decisions, because those years for me were, not only do I remember them very clearly, but what was so wonderful about them was the idea of really being a kid. On a kibbutz, kids just get to be kids, mm-hmm. and the novelty and the wonder of the world is really experienced in that way on a kibbutz. And that 100% drives me in my business, in the cupcake business.
What's an example?
Well, every single cupcake I look to create is always an attempt to recreate that experience for even an adult. Mm-hmm. I'm always filtering everything through the perspective of a child, and that wonderment and that excitement and that nostalgia. And I think that my appreciation of that comes from those early years.
Was there any baking in those early years? Or
absolutely.
Mostly?
That's where I probably got to enjoy and see the most. My mom was at home all the time, and, because people would stop by at all times of the day and you were expected to provide them with something to eat, there was a lot of cooking and baking going on. And immediately I gravitated towards watching, the baking end of it, the sweet end of it. My mom's a fabulous baker. So I spent a lot of time with her and a lot of time in the kitchen, and I got to watch her, and it just became, part of our daily routine, and it just becomes part of your kind of vocabulary. You understand it.
And I would imagine that your mom wasn't necessarily baking cupcakes on the kibbutz, but what are some of the sweets that you remember?
She did actually. I think that's why our house was so popular, because she did do a lot of kind of American traditional home-cooked kind of stuff. She wasn't really – Israeli pastries are different. There's a different palate in Israel. And my mom was really making kind of that fluffy white cake with the heavy frosting that, we all love and I love. And people swarmed to our home.
You moved to New Jersey when you were 7 years yeah. old. Why did your family move from Israel to the United States?
I think Israel obviously has a history of turmoil, and the years we were there, there was particularly heavy conflict, and our entire visit there was marked by those struggles, and we lived on the northern border, so there were a lot of incidents of, unfortunately, people that we knew who lost their lives, and I just think with three young children, my mom felt it was time to come back to the United States, be near her family, provide a little more secure environment for her kids.
What was life like here in comparison?
Well, I grew up close to Manhattan, but I actually grew up in a very small town. So in some ways, it mimicked that experience. I had a very idyllic childhood. We rode our bicycles everywhere, and our parents, didn't have to lock their doors and weren't worried about where we were. So a lot of the experiences were similar in that way. And we had, I did a lot of baking at home. I was definitely one of those kids who, for my parents' anniversary, would undertake some baking, cooking project.
You decided to become a lawyer, at least in your first career. Why did you decide to become a lawyer versus a baker or enter the culinary life?
I think for two reasons. One of the great things about the landscape right now is that young people realize that there is a career in cooking and baking. When I was a kid, it just was such a far, I never even considered it because it just hadn't presented itself as an option. However, at an early age, I did fall in love with politics. And at that time, for a woman, having a law degree was an asset in the political arena. So that's why I pursued the law degree.
You went to Brandeis. Mm-hmm. And where did you go to law school?
I went to New York Law School here.
You worked for a couple of elected New York City officials in New York City.
Yeah. I worked primarily for Councilmember Ken Fisher. I was his legislative counsel and really enjoyed that.
What was some of the legislation you worked on?
The biggest one I worked on was the anti-smoking legislation. So that was a huge undertaking. We did a lot of, while I was there, another huge project we worked on was the waste transfer station and recycling program here in New York. So I got to work on some really, you know, very critical, very interesting hearings and pieces of legislation.
Why did you make the leap from lawyer to baker?
I think a lot of things kind of came together at the same time. I had already been thinking about a career change. I'd had a wonderful run at the council, but there were areas that I was very curious about getting into professionally, business being one of them. I knew nothing and really wanted to explore it sometime in my lifetime. So that was in the back of my head already. Ken was running for borough president's office, and we all got to work on a campaign, and that was very exciting. And I really felt that if I wasn't going to move to Washington, you know, I didn't want to stay at the council any longer.
And he lost.
Yes, and he did not win, which, you know, I took as a sign. And on top of it, I was dating my current husband and partner, Jason, who's a business genius, and he really lit the fire for me on pursuing a business. And so we together explored some options, and just a few. There were really two or three things we were considering. And at that time, this was over a summer, I was doing a lot of baking, and it was very popular that summer with friends and family, and it just kept coming up. And I don't know which one of us suggested it, but immediately it clicked. We knew I wanted to do a business. This was a talent I had. And so we brainstormed, but it happened very quickly. 2 or 3 months from the time we said, oh, this seems like a good idea, we had a store open.
What other ideas were you flirting with?
Anything children related. We were looking at a kid's haircutting, perhaps. But again, that was nothing either one of us knew how to do.
Did you have children at the time?
No, I didn't. We were dating. I had a dog. That was it.
What kind of dog?
I have a golden retriever.
So do I.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
And they're the best.
I'm Jessica Harris, and you're listening to From Scratch. My guest is Mia Bauer, co-founder of Crumbs, a cupcake bakery with retail shops across the United States. Mia and her husband, Jason, opened their first shop in 2003. So you decide, okay, we're going to open a bakery,
yeah.
And it happened very quickly.
Very quickly.
Whose capital was used to open the bakery?
We self-financed our first store. You know, we didn't really put together a business plan, which I'm surprised about now in retrospect, that we really just thought we could do it. And I say often that maybe that's the best thing about the whole process, was we didn't think it through that much, because had we might not have done it. Mm-hmm. We would have seen more obstacles, and we just looked for a retail space. We talked about how we were going to do our production. I had a huge collection of recipes from, you know, dating back to when I was a kid, and we just thought we could do it.
And at the time, Jason was a boyfriend.
Yeah.
So you must have felt some level of conviction about him if you were willing to open a business. What was that about?
Well, again, when I said that a lot of things came together at once, I think early on we recognized that there was something really unique about our relationship. And maybe everybody says that, but there was just something that really worked. There was a wonderful balance between our personalities and the way we approached things and how we, you know, looked at everything, that we kind of met in the middle and that seemed to work out all the time. Mm-hmm. So when we were talking about doing a business together, I think that might have been the first thought we had about it, is whatever works in our relationship, we just had this sense would work great in business. And you know, to this point it has.
How long were you dating before you decided to open
the
business?
That's a good question. I think we were probably together about a year or two. Mm-hmm. And then we opened in March of 2003, and we were married that summer. And everyone teases us that they can't believe we made it through those first months where, you know, we never saw each other. We were working 24 hours a day, and we still, you know, were excited enough or in love enough or whatever it was to want to get married that quickly.
Why were you not seeing each other if you were working on this business together?
Well, it really was, in the beginning, maybe four employees, including Jason and myself. So there was the baking that had to get done, and then there was the sales end of it, working behind the counter. So we were passing ships. You know, the day is a long day in the bakery business. It starts at 7 a.m., sometimes 6:30 a.m., and it can go till midnight.
What was Jason doing at the time that he decided, okay, I'm going to go ahead and start this business with you?
He had just wrapped up a previous business he had been in, too. So the timing was pretty ideal for both of us. He was he had a celebrity licensing business where he licensed products with celebrity names like Britney Spears Bubblegum and Derek Jeter Flakes and a whole host of NSYNC Lip Balm, a whole host of products, really cute products. You know, there was a lull, and we really wanted to explore opening something together. And for me, I wanted to do retail, which, you know, maybe in retrospect, I'm like, what was I thinking? But
why do you say that?
Retail's tough. I mean, it's incredibly rewarding, and it's a real great way to experience the community if that's what you're interested in. That's what I was interested in. I really wanted to have a neighborhood shop where I knew everyone who came in. I knew how they liked their coffee. I knew their kids' names. And so in that respect, retail's incredible if that's what you're looking for. But it's a hard business. It's 7 days a week, at least for us. We're dealing with perishables, which is food. You know, there's a lot of factors that play into it that make it a little more difficult than, say, if you were doing wholesale or made to order or something along those lines.
I'm Jessica Harris, and you're listening to From Scratch. My guest is Mia Bauer, co-founder of Crumbs Bake Shop, a chain of cupcake shops that she started with her husband Jason in 2003. We'll hear more from Mia coming up. I'm Jessica Harris, and this is From Scratch. My guest is Mia Bauer, co-founder of Crumbs Bake Shop, a chain of cupcake shops that she started with her husband Jason in 2003. The first shop was located in New York City on the Upper West Side, and the company has grown to roughly 30 stores. What was unexpected for you when you were opening the first shop on the Upper West Side in Manhattan?
It's the same thing that's still unexpected to me, which is the overwhelmingly positive response. We had, I don't think we were even open 3 days when we had lines out the door. And it's not so much the numbers, you know, that's more Jason. He loves that. For me, it was just exactly what I had hoped for was happening. I mean, my mom was in Europe a few weeks ago, and she visited a customer of ours that they had befriended. It's just, we really have a rapport with our customers, and even as we expand, it's still that's still the feeling in our stores. It's a very neighborhood oriented kind of store.
Why do you think there were people flocking to your store after 3 days? What's so special about your store? I mean, there are several cupcake shops around New York City now, for example.
Yeah, there are a lot of reasons, I think. One is, I heard anecdotally at the time that people were tired of Starbucks and chains in general, and they were looking for a real homey kind of feel. So we addressed that need. Secondly, when we opened, there was Magnolia. That was it. So
Magnolia
now the landscape
Bakery, just for listeners who don't know, Magnolia Bakery became famous for being the favorite cupcake shop for the Sex and the City girls.
And what we did was very different than what Magnolia did. So we also offered an alternative. I mean, we both make cupcakes, but they're night and day.
How come?
Magnolia does, you know, a smaller, very simplified, you know, kind of basic cupcake. I mean, I actually think they're good, but they're just very different. Ours are, you know, we call them gourmet. They're full of fillings and full of toppings, and they're mammoth, and, you know, they're very nostalgic. There's a theme to them. So we just offered an alternative. So I think those two are two reasons are the primary reasons. And even as we continue to grow, it's still critical to us that every customer has that kind of experience when they come in, where they're greeted, they're remembered, they're, you know, they feel like they're in a neighborhood store, no matter how many stores we have. So I think that's what drew people to us.
You say that people were reacting against the chains,
yeah,
like Starbucks, and yet you are becoming a chain.
Yeah.
Jason, in an article in 2008, November, said that he wanted to grow to 250 stores in 5 years and grow rapidly. So you are becoming what your customers did not want initially.
Right.
How do you reconcile that?
Well, there are a couple of things. First of all, I'll just right off the bat say that's what I'm around for. I rein Jason in a little. When I hear the number 250, I have to chuckle to myself because that will never happen.
How many cupcakes is that a day?
Well, we do 150,000 a week, so and with 26 stores. So you can do the math. I can't, unfortunately. There's this balance between the two of us. Perhaps it's not something I should say as a business person, but I loved the one store, and I was very content with that one store. And I certainly don't want to stifle his dream and ambition. So we work together. You know, there's an idea that it's okay to expand as long as we're not pirating our stores, as long as we're not on every corner. But most importantly, as long as the quality stays the same and the experience stays the same. And, you know, he understands that as much as I understand his desire to grow.
I'm Jessica Harris, and you're listening to From Scratch. My guest is Mia Bauer, co-founder of Crumbs Bake Shop, a chain of cupcake shops that she started with her husband and Jason in March 2003. We're in the NPR studio on 42nd Street between 5th and 6th Avenues, and right downstairs, coincidentally, is a Crumbs shop. Mm. And I'm wondering how often you go into your shops, like the one downstairs, and don't tell them who you are. You pretend to be a customer. And what are some of the things that you find negative? Even.
Of course, I go in regularly every day. It's, you know, I have to, not only from a business perspective, but, you know, I feel very attached and, you know, this is my baby. This is one of my babies. So it used to be impossible to go incognito. Everybody knew me. Now, there are times when I walk in and someone might not know who I am, and it's kind of like a stab in the heart. But I, you know, I, in some ways it's good because I can have an experience without the employee knowing who I am and catering to me.
What's an example of something that you saw that you needed to correct or improve?
Often, you know, we're very particular about our display and how you set up and how it should look for the customer. The cleanliness of the store is so important to us. I'm a neat freak, so I tend to hire neat freaks, and then, you know, they train neat freaks, and that's how it goes. We have a very, very thorough checklist when we go in and go through, from, you know, the way the employee addresses a customer to the look of the store to the quality of the product to everything. We also do, I don't know if I should be announcing this, but we just introduced pep checks. And kind of the company is split. Half the company thinks it's the greatest thing we've ever done in the entire world because we're, those of us that are peppy think, of course, everyone, and then there are several, you know, there's the other faction that can't believe we would do pep checks, but...
And what are pep checks?
You know, your demeanor with a customer really matters. If you aren't happy, this is not what you should be doing. You know, I want every one of our employees' experience for themselves to be a positive one. You know, we'll do whatever it takes to make our employees happy. We are always... open to suggestions about what could improve their experience. But the bottom line is, this should be a job you love. If we've done everything we can to make this a job that you will love and you still don't love it, then it's not where you should be.
How did you come up with the idea?
For the pep checks?
Yeah.
This was a suggestion of one of our incredible team members, and I don't know if she had seen it in a previous place of employment or, you know, if she just had decided this is what she was going to call it. But we all were circling around this idea for a while, mm-hmm. like how, you know, we can train our employees and we can have the store look a certain way, but, you know, we want happy people in our stores.
I'm Jessica Harris, and you're listening to From Scratch. My guest is Mia Bauer, co-founder of Crumbs Bake Shop, a chain of cupcake shops that she started with her husband and Jason in March 2003. Prior to starting Crumbs, Mia was an attorney for elected New York City officials. Mia and Jason also wrote a children's cookbook called Lolly LaCrumbs Cupcake Adventure.
It's definitely a mouthful.
So going back to the early days when it was four of you, your then boyfriend, Jason, now yeah. husband, what was it like? Were you doing all the baking?
Initially, very, very quickly, I realized that it was going to be impossible to do the volume myself. So very early on, we went looking for a commissary that could produce for us. I would give them my recipes. They would be clearly exclusive to us, and they would do the baking for us. And that was because we didn't have room on premises in our one store. At the time, we were concerned, and it turned out to be one of the best business decisions we've ever made because we can manage the quality. Every store is getting the exact same product. We were able to scale up. Like I said, we're doing $150,000 a week per, you know, so to be able to go from a couple thousand to that would have been extremely difficult.
You mentioned that you used your own capital to open the store.
Yeah.
And now that you're expanding, mm-hmm. what is that situation now?
Well, we were self-financing, I think the first five stores. We would go to the banks, get a loan, use that loan to build a store, pay off that loan, open another store. But 2 years ago, we sold a portion of our business to a single private investor. And that has given us the capital to expand the way we have in the past couple of years. And that's been a really ideal situation as well.
And was that an accident that this private investor invested in you in exchange for equity? Or
no,
did you go out looking for it?
We had been approached even early on a number of times by some large
venture capital
yeah,
firms.
Yeah, and some companies as well. And it obviously planted the seed in our head. We thought, you know, maybe at that moment we hadn't realized we were ready for that, and we weren't. We waited a couple of years, but it became evident to us that there were people we could partner with, and the right person came along, and we are really grateful.
Yeah. Could you please describe what your store, or even the first store on the Upper West Side, looks like for those listeners who are unfamiliar with Crumbs?
Sure. It's kind of modeled after a 1940s candy shop with wood cases and big display cases. So when you walk in, you're kind of bombarded with this amazing, colorful, appealing view of all the cupcakes and cookies and cakes. So that's always been the look of the store. It's supposed to be warm and inviting. There's a lot of wood touches. Our slogans are written around the stores. We have...
What are some of the slogans?
Made by hand, baked with love, mm-hmm. and serving smiles daily. Those are our two taglines. And you know, that was a very deliberate process. You know, we spent a lot of time thinking about what was important to us and kind of what we felt made a statement about how we feel about the company and what Crumbs is.
I'm Jessica Harris, and you're listening to From Scratch. My guest is Mia Bauer, co-founder of Crumbs, a cupcake bakery with retail shops across the United States. Mia and her husband Jason opened their first shop in 2003 on the Upper West Side in New York City. Prior to starting Crumbs, Mia was an attorney, and Mia and Jason also wrote a children's cookbook called Lolly LaCrumbs Cupcake Adventure. What was the genesis of the cookbook?
Well, I always had a desire to write a children's storybook. This predates Crumbs. I felt that I could kind of get into that headspace, and I had a lot to say about my own experiences at that age, because Lolly is kind of geared for 5-year-olds, 6-year-olds. And then over the years, I realized that what I wasn't seeing anywhere was this combination of an activity book with a story that accompanied it. So I loved the idea of you know, there are lots of children's cookbooks out there, but there are no cookbooks that have a story that is built into the cookbook that kind of informs all the recipes that are in there. And this is even before I had kids. I just thought it would be so much fun to be able to read a story to my child and then follow it up with kind of a kinesthetic, like an actual activity that would support the story. The story came to me very quickly in the shower one day. It was a very long shower, though. You know, I started thinking about this great idea I had for a story, and I wouldn't get out of the shower until I kind of had it all formulated in my head, and I ran out and I wrote an outline on paper so I wouldn't lose the idea. And that same week, I was speaking to a friend of mine who said, you know, I have a editor friend at DK. Why don't you get an idea from her, you know, what the process is? So I remember sitting in a diner and it was really loud and I was having a staff meeting. That's where we used to have staff meetings before we had office space. We would sit in a diner. And this call came in and I said, well, can I just bounce this idea off you of the story I have? And more so than the story, the idea of coupling the children's cookbook with the story. And she had just been hired by DK to DK had always been a pictorial. Their children's division had always been pictorial and had always been about some sort of lesson like math skills. You know, it was always about teaching a skill of some sort. They didn't do any characters and they hadn't done anything that was non-pictorial yet. And she said she had just been brought on to kind of explore this world. So the timing was perfect. And so what she suggested was that I really beef up the measurements and some of that in both the recipes and the story. So it would really kind of fit this category. And it became this incredible experience because I had the story, I had the recipes, and now you had this added element where a child who was reading the story could also practice their math skills of measuring. It was just more than I ever could have expected. And it was a great working relationship. And it just came, that was another thing, you know, another business idea that came together very quickly.
You've had a charmed life to some degree. You know, the book, you had this idea for the bakery, and 3 days after opening, there were lines at your door. What has been, and by the way, you get along great with your husband, with whom you started the business. What's been harder for you than you expected, or what didn't work out in the way that you thought, if anything?
What's been challenging is changing my approach in terms of management and employees. I'd never been a boss. And with the early stores, all my employees were my friends and I loved them and they were family. And that's been the greatest challenge with a large company, not only because I don't have the face time to have that relationship with the hundreds of employees we have now, but it's also not the best approach to managing people, both for myself and for them.
What was your office space like before you opened the store?
We had no office for the first five stores. The best we had was a basement. I can't call it an office. It was really a storage space that the building gave us that wasn't even attached to our store. So it was in a residential building, in their basement, no windows. The heating pipes for the building, the steam pipes for the building ran through our office, so to speak. And in the winter, when the heat was cranking, we'd literally be sitting in our undershirts and underpants because it was over 100 something degrees in there. And when you ask about challenging moments, I definitely, you know, I could handle every difficult customer. I can handle 24-hour day working. But that office sent me into a nervous breakdown almost. Yeah. And that went on for years and years and years. And then, you know, from that, we finally got an office that could only fit two desks and still didn't have a window, but was above ground. And, you know, we look at things from that perspective now, like, I can't believe we have 10 desks. You know, it's kind of a miracle.
And you talk about you can handle anything, including challenging customers. Talk to me a little bit about that. I mean, you really do face, pretty tough cookies in Manhattan.
But that's also a blessing in disguise. So I would argue that New York customers are the most difficult customers, but they're also the most loyal, and they also push us to be at the top of our game. And that's such a blessing. I don't know that we would have that anywhere else the way we do in New York. And, you know, everyone needs to, in my opinion, everyone needs to be pushed.
What's an example?
Well, if the quality is even off by a fraction of a percent, we'll hear about it.
Just one.
Not enough filling in the cupcake. So we do, everything we make is by hand, which is really unusual, especially for the quantity that we do. And we're really proud of that. So it's not automated. It's not made by machine. So every cupcake is filled by hand, frosted by hand. The toppings are done by hand. And it maintains kind of that this came out of, you know, your grandma's kitchen feel. But as a result, it doesn't matter how often we explain to our customers that there are going to be some imperfections, which we've actually learned to manage a lot better. But also the consistency isn't going to be 100%.
Shirley might have been tired one morning and might not have put as
which, you know,
much
filling in. We're always trying to correct because, you know, we understand that if you come in for the same cupcake every day and you expect to get a certain amount of filling inside your cupcake, it's a very reasonable expectation. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if it's off by, you know, the teeniest amount, we'll hear about it. You know, and at first, you know, we might roll our eyes, but ultimately we're really, really appreciative. And
it's New York after all.
It's New York.
Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
My guest has been Mia Bauer, co-founder of Crumbs Bake Shop.
Coming up, we'll hear from Fadi Jaber, founder of Sugar Daddies, a cupcake franchise in the Middle East. I'm Jessica Harris, and this is From Scratch.
I'm Jessica Harris, and this is From Scratch. My guest is Fadi Jaber, founder of Sugar Daddies, a chain of cupcake shops located in the Middle East. Fadi opened the first Sugar Daddies in Amman, Jordan in 2007 when he was 30, and there are now Sugar Daddies franchises in Dubai and Beirut, Lebanon. Fadi grew up in Saudi Arabia and went to high school and college in the United States, and he is the son of Palestinian refugees. Fadi worked in marketing at Unilever prior to becoming a cupcake entrepreneur. Welcome, Fadi.
Hi, Jessica. Thanks.
When did you first discover American cupcakes?
When I was a kid growing up on this American compound that was run by an oil company in Saudi Arabia. A lot of my classmates, actually the majority of them were Americans, and whenever they'd have me over for birthday parties or just dinners, their mothers always baked these wicked cupcakes or brownies or cookies, and I just fell in love with American desserts.
What is an American compound? Can you describe that a little bit?
It's basically this huge city within walls, and it has about 40,000, maybe 50,000 residents. So it's very self-sufficient. We've got our own school. We have our own commissary / supermarket, mail center, like almost our own government within this compound.
And you said it was the compound of an oil company. What oil company was it?
Aramco. So basically all the kids I went to school with, their parents worked for this oil company. They could be engineers or doctors. My father personally was a doctor. So because there were so many residents that there needed to be a hospital to cater to service the residents. And that's where my father worked.
And then you were educated in the United States for high school. Where did you go to college?
I went to William & Mary in Virginia.
What did you do after graduating from college?
Fresh out of graduation from college, I went back to Saudi Arabia where my parents were wrapping up their career at Aramco and heading towards retirement. But I got accepted to Unilever, and their main office was in Jeddah, Saudi Arabia, which is on the western side.
Did you enjoy working at Unilever? What did you do for them?
I did. I really liked it. I worked in their marketing department, which is what I majored in college. Initially, when I first joined Unilever, I was helping the brand manager on skincare products, such as Vaseline and Pond's. and the skin lightening cream called Fair and Lovely. And then I moved on to become a brand manager on Close-Up Toothpaste.
So how did you shift from marketing Vaseline and Close-Up Toothpaste to running a cupcake franchise? What was the turning point?
I just knew that at some point I wanted to get out of the corporate world and do something on my own. And I went to New York on holiday, I think it was 4 years into my career at Unilever, and my friend was dying to take me to Magnolia's. And so she took me there. I fell in love with the concept, and I thought, hey, this would be a great business opportunity for the Middle East.
Magnolia Bakery, the cupcake store in the West Village, which became famous through Sex and the City, the TV episode.
Exactly.
Do you remember which specific cupcake it was that you ate?
It was the vanilla with pink frosting, which apparently is their bestseller.
And so at that moment, you sort of said, aha, I'm going to open up a cupcake shop in the Middle East. Did you think you would open up one shop? And how did you know you wanted it to be in Jordan?
Well, my parents had retired in Jordan in 2000, soon after I joined, or pretty much at the same time that I joined Unilever. And I helped my parents design their home, their retirement home. So naturally, I developed a strong emotional attachment to our house, which was in Jordan. And I told my parents one day, I want to come back and live here with you guys. I had been away from home since I was 15, and I just felt it was time to return to the nest. And my dad said, as soon as you have a business idea, let me know, and I'll be the first to back you up.
When you decided to leave your job and, you know, pursue this path of opening a bakery, when did you go to your boss and say, I'm leaving Unilever?
After I had lunch with my friend at Subway, and he told me, you know, it's now or never. I basically sat with him, and I was like, I had just come out of a really terrible meeting at work, and I was just fed up, and I was like, I really just want to be my own boss and do my own thing, and I really want to open this cupcake shop.
Mm.
He's like, well, do it. And I'm like, yeah, but I need to stick around at Unilever for a few more years and save up more money and, you know, make sure I have enough capital. And he was like, well, have you done your homework? Do you know how much money you're going to need to start up a cupcake shop in Jordan?
Mm-hmm.
I was like, no, not really. I was like, but I do know I need to go to culinary school first. So I did my homework. I spent a few days researching, and I found this great culinary school in New York City. And so I applied. I got accepted. And then I went straight to my boss's office and resigned.
Yeah, tell me a little bit about that resignation meeting.
It was a really nice memory because I had a really good rapport with everybody I worked with at Unilever. I was very friendly with everyone, and they were with me. And I remember telling my boss's boss that I was leaving to pursue this dream of mine. And he was like, I tip my hat to you. Well done. You know, most people spend their whole life trying to figure out what it is they want to do, and you figured it out at the age of 28. And he didn't object. He supported me, and everybody else in the company did the same. And a lot of them were very envious and jealous because they were, you know, had families and wives and children, and whose wives would divorce them if they left this, like, you know, steady, high-paying job to open a cupcake shop. So since I had no responsibilities, I could afford to do something like that.
I'm Jessica Harris, and you're listening to From Scratch. My guest is Fadi Jaber, founder of Sugar Daddies, a chain of cupcake shops located in the Middle East. Fadi opened the first Sugar Daddies in Amman, Jordan in 2007, and there are now Sugar Daddies franchises in Dubai and Beirut, Lebanon. So you quit your job at Unilever, and you become a student at the Institute for Culinary Education in New York City. Was it the first time that you were going to be living in New York?
Yes, and that was another huge impetus for me to go to culinary school in New York, is I had fallen in love with the city over the years after I graduated from college, actually, because I had kept visiting one of my best friends that lives there. I loved the energy in the air. I loved the architecture. I loved the free spirit. I don't know. There was just so many appealing things about New York. And I was like, one day I want to live here, even if for just a year.
And when you finished the Institute for Culinary Education, were you enthusiastic about rushing back to Amman, Jordan to open this cafe?
I'll have to admit, I cried the entire way to JFK Airport as I said goodbye to my beautiful brownstone apartment with exposed brick in the bedroom. So I did. I literally sat in the cab and I cried, and the cab driver thought I was off my rockers.
You do sound enamored with American culture, or at least New York culture, to some extent. And, you know, in a way, that's translated to cupcakes.
Exactly.
And how do you think locals in Jordan react to the American influence?
It has been nothing but positive, to be honest with you. It's a really good question you ask. Because, yes, there is maybe slight resentment towards the U.S. foreign policy, but not necessarily to the American culture and the American people and American products.
The price per cupcake is, you know, quite expensive for a Jordanian whose annual, you know, income is, let's say, $5,000 on average. So we're talking about a clientele that perhaps is the upper echelon of Jordanian society to some extent.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. I'm not catering to the masses of Jordanians. Obviously, the ones, you know, that are making the kind of income that you're talking about would have never heard of a cupcake. Completely alien to them, and they would not be ready to spend as much money on a piece of cake as the types of consumer that I'm targeting.
Have you thought about making a cupcake or starting a shop that is more economical, that so that more people in Jordan could benefit?
It would be very difficult because we pride ourselves on the quality of our cupcakes, and we use really expensive ingredients and imported flour and really high quality chocolate. And so it'd be very difficult for me to price it any lower than I already have in order to make it affordable without compromising on quality. So not really.
Have you injected any Middle Eastern spin into the products? We talk about how much your clients like the American culture and they appreciate just a pure American cupcake, but have you injected any Middle Eastern spin into some of the cupcakes?
I have. One of our other really popular cakes is our date cake. So dates is a huge integral ingredient in a lot of our foods, and it's very popular during Ramadan, which is the holy month of fasting that Muslims observe. She break her fast on a date. So I've incorporated dates into some of my recipes, and they're quite popular, actually.
Is that called the Ramadan cupcake?
Yes, we call it that. Well, it was called the Ramadan cupcake when I first marketed it, but now we've got clever names for all of our cupcakes, but we've named it the Blind Date.
What are some other names of your cakes? Cupcakes.
Our carrot cupcake is called the 24 carat. The banana cupcake is called Monkey Business. Mm-hmm. The strawberry cupcake is called Pink Cadillac. And the vanilla is called the Fake Blonde.
I'm Jessica Harris, and you're listening to From Scratch. My guest is Fadi Jaber, founder of Sugar Daddies, a chain of cupcake shops located in the Middle East. So you started your first shop in 2007 in Amman. How did you get the word out that you were starting a cupcake shop?
Well, in the year that my shop took to complete construction, I couldn't sit around and do nothing, so I started baking from my house. I printed out my menu, and I circulated it in all the hair salons that I knew my target market would be frequenting, or the nail salons, or the gyms, and ladies started calling me and placing orders, and it was just complete word of mouth. So I had, you know, my name out even before I even opened my shop.
What was harder for you than you thought it would be?
I think the construction of the shop was a lot more difficult than I thought it would be. The first time doing it was definitely one of the most difficult, challenging experiences in my life. It took me an entire year to finish an 80 square meter shop space, which is roughly about 900 square feet. That's ridiculous. It shouldn't take more than 2 months.
Why did it take so long?
Just all sorts of complications. I relied on my architect to be my contractor, which is one mistake. You never do that. In fact, it's illegal in most countries to employ your architect as a contractor. You need to have both positions be completely separate.
You mentioned that you cried all the way to JFK when you were leaving New York to go back to Amman, to Jordan, to start this company. When you were constructing your store before you got it off the ground, did you have any moments where you were wishing you were somewhere else or not pursuing this?
You know what? No. Despite the anxiety and the stress, there was not one second where I wished to be doing something else. So I just stuck with it. I cried a lot and screamed and fought with everybody and yells and you know, lost a lot of hair on my head and just like, but I just kept with it.
Aside from the construction challenges, what were some of the other issues you faced in the early days?
Well, I remember, for example, having recruited kitchen staff. And I went to the local culinary school, which wasn't really a culinary school. It's more of a hospitality school. But they do give them some kitchen coursework. So I recruited, I think, 4 guys from there to work in our kitchen. And months into having recruited them, and they kept calling me to try to find out the progress on the construction. And I kept saying, one more month. And they eventually got so fed up. But I think they found other jobs. But they didn't have the courage to tell me that. So when I finally was ready to train and we had a shop and it was completed and it was ready to go, I called the 4 guys and I just told them that we were going to start training at 8 in the morning the following day. And so they said, okay, we'll be there. And none of them showed up. So on the first day of training, and we were about 3 days away from the grand opening, I had no staff in the kitchen. So I panicked, and I looked at my 4 baristas that had showed up to training, and I asked them, do you guys know of anybody that could come work for us? And they all whipped out their cell phones, made a few phone calls, and within 24 hours, I had 4 kitchen staff, new ones, that my baristas had recommended. And they are the same guys that are with me till this day.
You weren't just starting a business, but you were starting a business with ingredients that your employees never were exposed to before, or even with products that your employees had never been exposed to before. Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
Yeah, the one incident that sticks out in my head the most is when we first opened, you know, my staff had never been exposed to any of the desserts that we were making. So they had no idea what a cupcake was or what a brownie was, and I was teaching them stuff from scratch. So they didn't know that there was light brown sugar and dark brown sugar. They never knew what molasses was that we use in ginger snap cookies. They didn't even know what a ginger snap cookie was. And I remember telling them about the carrot cake, and I had mentioned on the task list to make carrot cake pineapple. So they just, it's like crushed pineapple in the actual cake batter. So I overheard one of the guys telling the other baker, just put crushed pineapple, don't put any carrot. And I said, excuse me? He says, yeah, you said here with pineapple. And I'm like, how can it be called a carrot cake if it doesn't have any carrot inside of it? He literally just thought that you could make a carrot cake just using the crushed pineapple and you didn't need to put any shredded carrots in there. And I was just, wow, astounded. Like, this is going to be a long journey. But now my guys are better bakers than I am.
You mentioned that you had guys who were going to work for you. How come no women?
It's difficult to recruit women to work back of the house, you know, doing laborious, like, kitchen work. You mostly find women working in professional jobs here in the Middle East. Or especially in Jordan, but you rarely find like a waitress or a dishwasher or a cook. You know, they're mostly guys.
I wonder, just as you pioneered, you know, cupcakes and American baked goods in the Middle East or in Amman, Jordan, at least, if you could also pioneer having a couple of women working for you in the kitchen. What a novel concept.
Okay. Yeah. Exactly. I've had girls approach me to want to work in my bakery, but it's like, I can't, you know, they're girls from, like, you know, they speak perfect English and went to school in the States and whatnot, and I'm just thinking in my head, like, do you want to work in my bakery so you can get all my secrets and then open a cupcake shop yourself in Jordan and compete with me? So there's always that threat as well.
Who funded the business?
The first shop was funded in thirds by me, by my father, my brother, and I.
What did it cost to get the whole shop up and running?
Excluding culinary school. $180,000.
And including culinary school, how much is culinary school?
Culinary school plus living in New York cost me $50,000. And I paid for that personally from my savings.
So in a way, you've led somewhat of an insulated life. You grew up on this American compound in Saudi Arabia. You went to an American boarding school. You went to college in Virginia. How is it, you know, being back in Amman, Jordan, where you are not insulated anymore? Have you thought about that difference?
It's a little bit difficult, to be honest with you. But I've managed to adjust. And I think what makes it easier is that I have a loving family, and I just have a really comfortable setup in general. But it's difficult, given my upbringing, to live in as traditional and conservative of a society as Jordan is. Now, it's not, obviously, nowhere near as conservative as Saudi Arabia is, but still, it's different for me.
And how involved are you in the business now?
I'm very involved. I still, if I'm in the shop and happy birthday needs to be written on a cake, I still do that because my guys prefer my handwriting over theirs. I do the accounting on a daily basis myself, so I know every penny that's been spent and every penny that has been generated. And I still assign the task on a daily basis to my staff.
Well, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.
My guest has been Fadi Jaber, founder of Sugar Daddies, a chain of cupcake shops located in the Middle East. I'm Jessica Harris, and this is From Scratch.